Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hand. Today is Wednesday, April 26th, 2017, and obviously the Clippers lost in heartbreaking fashion to the Utah Jazz in Game 5 of their first-round series last night. So since we have another weird double off day in this series between games 5 and 6, which will be an elimination game for the Clippers, we'll have a chance to spread out the analysis of that elimination game a little bit more, and again of this game 5 loss. So because it was such a late game, I'm recording here in New York pretty late at night. And so we're going to leave this episode kind of briefly just talking about the basic fallout of this game and what it means. So Chris Paul, actually, I was very critical of him following the Clippers game 4 loss. I think he did what he needed to do in this game. I think this is a game where it's fair to say that he was let down by his teammates, because down the stretch in this game, the Clippers scored 34 points in the fourth quarter, and Chris Paul and J.J. Redick assisted on 31 of those 34 points. Now, in Game 4, what we saw is the Clippers, even though Utah's offense was kind of unstoppable late in the game, the Clippers only scored 18 fourth-quarter points. Chris Paul didn't take over and lead the offense the way he needed to, even though he scored 9 points of his own. The buck has to stop with Chris Paul when it comes to the Clippers offense not producing. But in this game, the Clippers were actually, it was their defense that fell apart. And you can't blame defensive failures on one guy unless, you know, we've seen in situations where Utah will specifically attack Jamal Crawford. We didn't see that late in the game here. It was the team's collective failure, whether it was through strategy or simply because they don't have the personnel, they've continued to come up short against this Utah space lineup. And I think largely it's a personnel issue, which is really defeating for a team that you expect to be a lot better on the defensive end of the floor. Now, what's especially tricky about this Clippers lineup not seeming to have the personnel to handle Utah's small ball lineup is that in pretty much by any estimation, this Clippers team goal in the short and long term is to beat the Golden State Warriors. And to beat the Golden State Warriors, you obviously, the Clippers aren't going to have the wings to outplay Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green. The Clippers don't have the wings to outplay them. They need to win any potential series with the Warriors through Chris Paul controlling the tempo of the game, DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin dominating down low. Obviously, with Blake Griffin injured, it almost completely ruins those plans, but you're not going to win a series against the Warriors by beating their wings. What you would hope to do is neutralize them, or at least not get killed in those matchups, so that Blake and Chris doing enough in their positions is enough to make you kind of overcome and make up for your shortcomings on the wing. Now, if you're not able to do that against Rodney Hood, Joe Ingles, Gordon Hayward, and Joe Johnson, who are nice players, how are you going to do that against the Warriors team? And I think maybe that's what's most damning about the fact that the Clippers are losing the series in this way. It's not that we can say, well, the Clippers are the better team, but it's a weird matchup, and with Blake injured, and blah, blah, blah. Because this is the type of game that the Clippers should have been preparing for the last 6 months, for the last year since their elimination last season, and really for the last 3 years since Golden State burst onto the scene with Draymond Green playing small ball. This is where the Clippers need to be better, and they need to prove, in order for this lineup, this big three with both Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, traditional big men with max contracts, in order for this core to be sustainable and legitimate, you need to prove that you can beat these teams. And if you can't defend a four-out lineup without going out and getting the personnel to play four-out with them, then it's no longer a clash of styles. It's simply that one style is more effective than the other. And I don't think that's the case. I think that the Clippers can, at their best, play with these teams, but they've really failed to do so in this series. And especially with Blake Griffin out, they just don't have the bodies. And that's very discouraging, both looking forward and saying, how do the Clippers win this series? Well, it's discouraging because they don't have the bodies to match up defensively, and this is what is costing them game after game. At the same time, for the Clippers players, just as far as in the moment, they're discouraged because you're Austin Rivers guarding Joe Johnson, you're Raymond Felton guarding Gordon Hayward, you're in these mismatches, but at the same time, it's the best that the Clippers really have to throw at the Jazz. And so we reached a point in the game in the fourth quarter where I was saying, the Clippers are going to need to score on possessions that they probably shouldn't score on. You know, like Chris Paul making tough shots, stuff like that. And they're going to need to get stops in situations where they probably shouldn't get stops. Like double-teaming Joe Johnson and Rodney Hood missing an open three. And they almost broke through and got it. They were right there in the fourth quarter. But ultimately, they fell short. Now, one thing that I think we have to realize going forward is, because this is most likely a personnel issue, the Clippers aren't going to be able to, quote-unquote, fix their defense. There's no way to throw a double team at Joe Johnson and solve the problem, like I see a lot of people talking about on Twitter, because it's the dilemma that the Clippers have really been faced with in the last several games. They don't have the individual defenders to stop these guys one-on-one. When Utah puts four guys out there who can score with the ball in their hands, and the Clippers don't have four guys out there who can defend on an island, someone's going to get beaten. They target a weak defender. Someone gets beaten. The help comes. The ball gets kicked out. The ball gets rotated and moved, and it ends up with an open three from a very good shooter. Now, if you send a double team at someone like Joe Johnson to stop him from beating you, the Jazz have shown that they're both willing and able to get the ball out of those double teams, rotate, and find open shooters. So you're left on an island, basically, or DeAndre Jordan has to do a lot. And what's telling, and Robert Flom pointed this out on Twitter, in the two games that the Clippers have won, DeAndre Jordan has been very active on the defensive end. He's made second efforts, and what I mean by that is he'll come over to help on a drive, and then when George Hill gives a little dump-off pass to Derek Favors, DeAndre will get back in the play and challenge Favors at the rim. What we've seen in the three games that the Clippers have lost is that DeAndre is making these reads where he'll come over and help, but he's not had the legs to make that second jump or that second effort to get back into plays to challenge a shot and then get a defensive rebound, to help and then recover to his man. He's making one rotation and that's it. And whether it's a fatigue thing or whether it's a morale thing after seeing Blake Griffin go down with injury again, the Clippers need more from him if they're going to win this series. They need more activity on the defensive end. And it's when he's active defensively, that's when we start to see him actually being more active offensively as well. And he tends to kind of spark the whole team and get them going and communicating on the defensive end. Without that, the Clippers are toast in this series. But even with it, they're not going to stop this Utah space and pace group that shoots the three ball so well. They just don't have the personnel for it. So they need to win in other areas. Like we talked about in a potential series against the Warriors, Luke Mbamute isn't going to beat Kevin Durant one-on-one. You need to minimize the amount you lose at the small forward position and win in other areas. And where the Clippers have really been let down in this series is with the supporting cast. Now, there's a stat floating around Twitter that I haven't verified, but it says that Utah's bench is outscoring the Clippers 205-127 in this series. That's just the bench lineups, 205-127. So that's an 80-point difference. And this, it's actually, I went through and did the math. The total plus-minus for this series is zero. I believe the Clippers have won two games by a combined 13 points, and the Jazz have won three games by a combined 13 points. So for the Clippers bench to have been outscored by 78 points in these five games, it means the Clippers starters have outscored Utah starters by 78 points, which means essentially, you know, it all points towards the Clippers supporting cast not doing a sufficient job. And even though the starters, like I said, have outscored Utah starters, a big part of that is J.J. Redick, who had really four abysmal games before having a good Game 5. He actually had an amazing Game 5. But what's notable, I think, is that Jamal Crawford had a really good Game 4, but Redick was horrible. Redick had a really good Game 5, but Jamal Crawford was invisible. Austin Rivers, in his first game back, didn't do much. Raymond Felton struggled. The Clippers, Paul Redick and Jordan all contributed offensively. Paul Pierce, of all people, made two threes off the bench. The Clippers played 11 guys in this game. The other seven guys, aside from the four I just mentioned, combined to shoot 4-for-26 from the field. They got nothing. Paul had 28 points. Redick had 26. DeAndre Jordan had 14. Their next leading scorer was Luka Mbamute, who had 7 points on 1-of-5 shooting. And then Paul Pierce, who had 6 points. Just, he made 2 spot-up threes. There was no help. Most Bates, 0-of-3, minus 10 in his 13 minutes as a starter. Brandon Bass, 1-of-3, minus 5 in 4 minutes off the bench. Wesley Johnson looked so scared and timid offensively that he didn't even get a shot up in his 3 minutes of play. Austin Rivers, rusty in his return, didn't make a shot. Raymond Felton, 0-of-3, minus 8 in his 17 minutes. And the Clippers found themselves in a situation where they lost the game by 4, and they were a plus 3 in Chris Paul's 38 minutes, meaning, therefore, they were a minus 7 in the 10 minutes he was off the floor. And there's two sides to this coin, I think. The first is that Chris Paul doesn't seem fatigued to me, and this was a very important game. So he should probably be playing more than 38 minutes. I mean, Gordon Hayward played 41 minutes. DeAndre Jordan played 40 minutes. Over in the Houston-Oklahoma City series, which I know we haven't gotten to recap action around the league very much, but maybe we'll get to that in the off days coming up, Russell Westbrook played 42 minutes in an elimination game. So why is Chris Paul only playing 38 minutes? And it might seem trivial, the difference between 38 and 42. But if the Clippers went minus 7 in 10 minutes of Chris Paul, in 10 minutes without Chris Paul, they went minus 7, that means that if you play Chris Paul 4 extra minutes, you make up 3 or 4 points, because again, they're playing positive when Paul is on the floor. And this is a very different game if Chris Paul plays 42 minutes instead of 38, because the bench really struggled in that third quarter when Chris Paul was out. And even when he was in, the team didn't play well in the third quarter. But it's just confusing to me that his minutes haven't been through the roof, especially with two off days coming up after this game. I'm sure that there's a lot more to analyze, and I encourage you guys to send in comments, questions. Let me know what you noticed during this game and so far this series, what you think the Clippers should try in a potential Game 6, because obviously we've got a lot of time to talk in between this Game 5 and Game 6, but like I mentioned earlier in the week, once we've seen these two teams go head-to-head so many times, we can only rehash the problem that the Clippers have a hard time matching up with Joe Johnson so many times. So let me know what you're seeing, what I haven't quite talked about yet, on Twitter, at LucasJHand, and my email, lhand.clipsnation@gmail.com. Because for me, right now, I don't think there's a lot to do but see the urgency that this team comes out with in game six. Because I've made the analogy before that the Clippers are not predators, they are prey. And sometimes they sneak away limping, and sometimes they get killed. But they never seem to quite kill and eat their opponents. If the Clippers had stepped on the throat of the Jazz in game one when Rudy Gobert got injured and built a big early lead and played with a sense of urgency early in that game one, which they did not do, maybe they would have shown that they were predators. Or if they closed out that game four in Salt Lake City to make this game a closeout game to potentially win the series in five, and then they had done that, it would have been a very predatory thing to do. But losing game one because you didn't need to win it, and then losing game four because you'd already gotten your split in Utah, those are very Clipper things to do. Losing this game five is a very Clipper thing to do. It feels like the Clippers always lose these game fives when the series are tied 2-2. And they back themselves into this corner where if they come out and play their best game with this passionate energy and their backs against the wall, they can beat Utah twice. No one's questioning that capability. I mean, they beat the Spurs twice 2 years ago after going down 3-2. The question is, will they? Because I said this on Twitter earlier, when you barely escape your predator, all it takes is one little slip, tripping over a tree branch, and you're dead. There's no margin for error. All it takes is one supernova fourth quarter from Joe Johnson like we saw in game four, or one super hot 60% from three shooting night like we saw Utah put up against the Clippers in March, and the series is over. It's not even that there's no margin for error left on the Clippers' part, but that their fate has essentially been taken out of their own hands when you leave it to a one-game sample size, because literally anything can happen in one game. So I ended my recap of Game 5 with this. At this point, there's nothing for the veteran Clippers to do but prepare for Friday's elimination game in Salt Lake City. With their backs against the wall, will we finally see LA play a complete game? Or will this season, and quite possibly this era, end in the disappointing and unfulfilling manner to which all Clippers fans have become so accustomed? I won't pretend to know the answer, but history certainly indicates the latter. And that might be a little bit of a downer note to close the show on, but sometimes these Clippers make it hard to be an optimist. I can have hope that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin will resign, that the Clippers will keep plugging away, that maybe they'll be able to put together a decent supporting cast to compete with the Warriors, to add another star maybe on the wing. But when you're in the moment like this and you see this team slowly crumbling, like we've seen them slowly crumble so many times before, it's very hard to really believe that they can do it. Now, I know that they can do it. I shouldn't say can, but to really believe that they will. And I told myself this after game four, too, because after game four, my initial reaction was that the Jazz getting healthy, feeling good about themselves, and the Clippers stumbling, missing Blake Griffin, that the Jazz were going to win the series in six games. That obviously now seems like a very likely outcome with the Clippers trailing 3-2 going into game six in Utah. But this is what I told myself when I was feeling like Jazz in six was the answer after game four. That if Chris Paul comes out and plays like the motherfucker that he can be, the Clippers are going to win that game. All they need is for him to really come out at that level and for the team to do it to be there behind him. Hitting shots, DeAndre Jordan active defensively. It can't be just Chris Paul. And we saw a little bit of that in tonight's Game 5 because Chris Paul, at least in the fourth quarter and for stretches during the game, was that guy, even if he didn't have a great dominant first half, especially in the fourth quarter. He brought it. He lifted the team like I asked him to following his failure to do so in Game 4. But now we need to see these Clippers play a complete game with bench scoring, with defensive intensity, with contributions from the rest of the guys in the starting lineup. All of that in support of Chris Paul playing like the point guard. And then we'll really see this team actualizing its potential, winning this series in 7 games, and going on to maybe take a game off of the Warriors, or at least be competitive in that series. But as long as Chris Paul either isn't playing at that level consistently, or the Clippers supporting cast isn't putting together a complete game behind him, they're going to struggle to beat the Jazz. Now, that's going to do it for this episode. Like I said, we've got 2 off days, so Thursday, tomorrow, is a complete off day, and then Friday we'll be previewing Game 6, which could be the last game of the Clippers season, and I suppose talking about a potential Game 7, which I believe would be on Sunday, because we wouldn't get to talk in between Games 6 and 7. So if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, like I said, anything that you think I haven't quite talked enough about during this series that you think I should focus on, any important matchups or strategy decisions that you see coming that you don't think I've made a note of, please hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan. Email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. You can feel free to do that also if you have any comments, questions, feedback in general about the show. To follow the Clips Nation blog on Twitter, it's at ClipsNationSBN. You can visit the blog at www.clipsnation.com. I wrote the recap for Game 5, so you can get kind of a look at my thoughts in the written form there if you wish. And follow the Clips Nation Facebook page by just typing Clips Nation into the Facebook search bar. And thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.